Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, so today I wanted to talk about spirituality and abundance, and the way that I see it from my personal experience. And I think, personally, I'm not a big fan of, over focus on financial abundance and teachings, because to me, abundance is so much more than finances, right? You can sit in a forest and just be completely tuned in to this flow of happiness and joy and being in tune with the universe, in tune with yourself, being happy and not lacking anything, but being completely abundant. And it will not matter what you have or not have. Because if you're not feeling this abundance, if you're not feeling complete, it will never be enough, right? Money, love, relationships, it will never be enough. And on the other hand, there are some very real, very pressing, very tragic circumstances that many of us have been forced to go through, where we have really been stripped of everything, and it makes you wonder, right, why can't I generate more? And especially, why is this happening to me immediately after setting on a spiritual path, or immediately after I have made a decision to actually do good? So why do worse things happen? It's a very big topic now. Why do bad things happen to good people, etc.? So I don't intend to go into theological discussions, but I don't want to oversimplify it and tell you that if you experience lack in your life, then something must be wrong with you. No, this is simply not true. In many cases, lack in our life is a reflection of our own limitations and programs that we have been unconsciously running, but in some cases it is a reflection of perhaps temporarily universe wanting to teach you something, setbacks, being on the wrong path. And sometimes we have no explanation for why bad things are happening to us, but we will see sometimes years later that it took us to a place where we would not have been otherwise. And so we can teach and help others who are in a similar situation. And that does not excuse or make the evil that has happened to us any better. But we have to accept that sometimes there is no explanation for it, or there is no explanation right now. So I'm not the kind of person who will oversimplify it. And I don't intend to say that, you know, here are five steps and you will always be happy and healthy. And yet, in most cases, these issues of abundance are a reflection of our own traumas, blocks, and in some cases also past life history. And especially for spiritually minded people, I think it is sometimes difficult to reconcile spirituality and abundance, right? Because we see so many lying, cheating con men who have built their lives on chasing money, and we definitely don't want to be like them. And it's understandable. We have other goals. We have other interests. We don't want to con other people. We don't want to be a used car salesman, you know, the proverbial used car salesman, although some of them are wonderful, honest people. So, but there is this underlying, you know, issue that we are better. We should be better than them. And I personally have had a lot of exposure to Western monasticism in the years before my setting out on the spiritual path for real. But I used to visit a monastery in Wales, and I stayed there maybe for 5 days, for 4 days at a time. It was a very strict Cistercian monastery, kind of in the middle of nowhere. And I think we often bring up the example of monasticism and the vows of poverty as somehow limiting to our financial abundance. And it's true. Vows of poverty made with, you know, great intent and passion and conviction before God and men can actually influence us over many lifetimes, long after they had been important and had been meaningful for us. But I want you to look at the other side of monasticism. It's not only about vows of poverty. I mean, none of the monasteries I've visited were poor. Let's face it. They owned a lot of land. In most cases, they ran very successful businesses selling either produce or, sometimes it was a brewery. In this case, it was religious articles. But it was a business and a thriving one. They always had orders. Visitors were never lacking, even in the middle of nowhere. The monastery was visited by excellent writers. The neighbors were well-traveled. Even in the middle of nowhere, they were well-connected. They had an excellent library. Every nun had her own room. They had land, a garden. They had, they could afford to, make their own ecological fuel, etc. And I would think also monasteries historically, they had a lot of land, a lot of servants at times. This is how still the Carthusian monasteries operate. What my point is here is that it wasn't the monastery that was really poor. It was an individual that made a vow to not own anything personally, except for what he or she needed of the articles of clothing, you know, personal items. But any personal property was given to the monastery. So it was owned communally, but not individually. And for example, the strictest of Western monastic orders, the Carthusians, they even, they didn't have their names written on their writings. And sometimes they would burn their books after death so that no vanity would take root, that you did not write for posterity and you did not write for fame, but you just wrote for yourself, which is a reminder of the Desert Fathers who would weave baskets for a year, and then at the end of the year they would destroy all of these baskets because they didn't really need to weave them, and nor did they intend to sell them, but they wanted something to do so that not to be idle. Now, I'm not suggesting anything by that, but what I'm trying to say is that there was a specific purpose and a specific reason for this vow. It is not to be contaminated by the riches. And I'm sure you have also seen the excesses of greed and riches in the church as well, in the Christian church. And I'm sure all these nuns and monks have also seen those excesses of old, right? The greedy bishops who would drink and wear gold-plated something and not care for other people. And guess what they wanted to do? They didn't want to be like them. So they didn't want to be rich. They didn't want to drink wine and eat meat every day. They wanted to focus on other things. But that was individual poverty. At the same time, monasteries thrived financially. They had gifts, they had businesses, they had lands, they had servants, they had amazing books. They were centers of learning. They were, in the Middle Ages, probably the only places where women were free and could learn. So it can never be a one-sided perspective in terms of poverty and renunciation. Yes, there was individual asceticism, but spirituality was always, always connected with success in one way or the other. That the difference is in what form this success was perceived. You know, if you want to renounce the world and follow the books or spiritual asceticism, or if you want to renounce the world and go be a circus artist, where your attention goes, energy flows, and your success is more likely. But I think true spirituality was always associated with abundance in the direction where the attention flowed, right? Where the attention went. And the same was, I think, Buddhic monasticism, because Buddha himself was a disillusioned rich man who saw desire as a cause of suffering to all the world. But also Buddhist monasteries are elaborate, and while, you know, they don't chase after material riches, but they also have lands and beautifully structured buildings and properties. So the community is thriving and guests are coming, and they don't advertise, and guests are coming by themselves because they stream to this light, if it's really a light-filled place, if it's a really spiritual place. You know, a lighthouse does not go chasing the ships. The ships see its light from afar. And I think this is also what happened in those early spiritual communities, desert fathers or Western or Buddhist monastics. Their light was shining and they were attracting abundance in the way that they had wanted to. So being spiritual never meant, you know, in very simple terms, being a loser. It meant being very successful. But just this definition of success varied, obviously, because they didn't want to be like the people they were running away from, the people they stopped respecting. They didn't want to turn into those greedy, oppressive bastards. So I think that's part of the issue that we have with spirituality, that, well, it's not an either-or issue. It's really focusing the energy into where you want it to flow and avoiding greed and, if needed, even focusing on simplicity. But at the same time, it never means not being successful. It never means lack. True spiritual motivation always attracts light, and light is per definition a flow of abundance. You know, even the book of Job, when we talk about meaningless suffering, but it ends with him receiving more than he had in the beginning. So it still ends with abundance, because intuitively we know that connection to the divine, that, you know, connection to the source is connection to the flow of abundance, the flow of everything, happiness, first of all, whatever constitutes happiness, right? Family, children, travel, property. In true spiritual abundance, it all comes together, and riches by themselves mean nothing, but neither spirituality means that you have to be poor. It never did. So these are very individual issues, and like, some people are called to simplicity. Some people think, I've met a lot of wonderful, spiritual, very rich people and cultured, very well traveled, and some of them thought it was too much, you know, and wanted some simpler life. And some people moved from richer countries to some much poorer countries because they wanted more simplicity. So that's very individual. But if you're not happy with where you are and what you are, so the core is obviously some or other form of spiritual obstruction or setback or block that you have had originally from before. So, and I think another issue in terms of being on the spiritual path is also when we decide that we're moving forward. We're often faced with obstructions. And sometimes even when it's a great decision or an important, you know, conversion experience, we get very dramatic setbacks. Sometimes people who set out on the spiritual path really lose everything. There have been cases of, you know, losing a job, a home, and getting into a car accident in 1 week. And it's, once again, it's seldom a punishment. It's never a punishment. At times, this can be a wake-up call from the universe to focus our energy on something else. Sometimes losing everything really opens the way for attention to flow elsewhere, for us to appreciate the riches within ourselves, the riches that we never have been able to receive from the universe because we put our trust elsewhere. The sometimes losing everything opens a way that we would have never been able to go on if we hadn't. And it doesn't mean that losing everything is good. And as I said, sometimes there is no reason, logic, or any explanation for it. But what happens is it opens a way and it makes us free in the ways we had not been able to experience this freedom before. And that's one of the things that happens very often when setting out on the spiritual path. Sometimes these obstructions and setbacks are really what they are, obstructions. And you can look at them as a test to persevere and to walk through. You know, when a child starts walking by himself, he has to fall or he will never learn to walk. So this is what happens. The universe withdraws its hand, supports, so that you can start to learn to walk by yourself. And it can be a very painful process, but that's the only way. There is no other way for you to start walking, to stand in your own power, to once again to reach into those inner resources and to find the strength that only you have, that no one and nothing else has, and to find the truth within you. There is no other way but to start walking by yourself. So how do you know that these obstructions and setbacks are telling you that you are actually on the right course, and not that you have wandered off the path and that you should go into a different direction? Now, I would say that if nothing goes wrong, something's definitely off. I don't believe it's possible to really go, you know, from happiness to happiness without any setbacks, because growth would not be possible. It would really be very disconcerting if you never had any setbacks for a very long period of time, because maybe it means that you know you're long spiritually dead. So I think obstructions and setbacks are normal, if for nothing else than to, you know, restore our attention to reality a little bit. But the core really, I think when it's mission and when it's something that is your soul urge, you will have two opposing forces within you. One would be a strong desire, strong call to go somewhere and to do something. And the other would be fear or sometimes self-sabotage. It's like, you know you have to go to the gym and it makes you really happy to exercise, but you really have to force yourself to get out of the house. It's something like that. And you have to struggle through it, and it gets better and better with each time, right? So it's exactly the same with following on the mission and with setting out on the spiritual journey. And I think it's important to recognize that first, there are most likely going to be setbacks, and second, that there is this element of fear and self-sabotage always present, because that's part of who we are. There is always some darkness in us that needs to be brought up to the light, released, and we can go further and further up. However, if you are constantly unhappy with what you're doing, and it becomes really this gray zone of comfort and security, with nothing bad happening, but nothing good happening either, and a lackluster progress from security to security, then probably you're not on the path that you want to be on. And probably something is off. And if you had not experienced, you know, those touches of the universe and visions about the future, and if everything is slowly going nowhere, there is more danger in this state, I think, than in fighting and desiring. So I think obstructions are normal, but sometimes you know for sure that things are just not working out. And you either have to wait or surrender the result. It comes with experience, the discernment. With time, we are also, I think, called to less and less secure paths, so we cannot know what will happen in 5 years. You know, this classical, where will you be in 5 years? Well, guess what? Unfortunately, the further I go, the less I know where I will be in 5 years. I know what I will be doing, but I have no idea where I will be. And I think this is also normal, because the security is placed, I place the security more in the spirit and in my trust in what I do, rather than in the external circumstances, right? And what I can secure, because really nothing is secure. People think their pensions are secure, their money is secure, and then the financial crisis strikes, whatnot, countries fall apart, banks die, the empires collapse, and there is nothing left. And it has been happening all over the world since the humanity began. So it's wonderful to have security, and we should try and keep our lives as secure as possible. But at the same time, putting the trust in any of these things, including financial abundance, would be silly, because none of us ever really knows what is going to happen. So that's why, again, the spirituality of old has found a solution in simply renouncing that abundance for a person, for an individual, and going instead for collective security, which I can tell you wasn't such a bad thing, because you didn't have to worry about pensions if you were living in a monastery. You would have been taken care of. So I think trust in the future and the universe is deeply associated with being on the right path and choosing your, following your call. But there is always this element of making the step first and then receiving what you hope for, because this is the element of faith, right? You follow, you go without knowing, and you only receive when you have entered, already leaving something behind. But I really see abundance as a flow of the universe, a flow of the spirit. So it's part of this universal flow. When you are aligned with the universe, when you're connected with the universe, you're always a part of the abundance. It is there for you to receive whatever you want. The question is, what do you want? And it's very different from individual to individual. So don't limit yourself by what others think or feel or what you think you should have or not have. Your deepest desires, what are they? What do you want for yourself? What is the most important thing? What is the second most important thing for you? Verbalize it. Write it down. How it will come to you is of no relevance. We can trust the universe. We can't micromanage the process. We can't micromanage how it will come to us. But we can put it out. We can say it, we can proclaim it. This is what I want. I want a house with a view. How will I get it is a different question. I don't know how, but I'm visualizing it and I'm feeling it and I'm feeling into it what it's like to live in a house with a view. Or what it's like to live in peace, free of anxiety. To live in a tiny little hut in the woods and just be by myself. Everyone, the dreams are very different. But I think the greatest part of achieving them is just tuning into this flow. Tuning into the universe. And this will be also a confirmation of being on the right path. Because you know that you are tuned in. You know very deep inside that this is the path you are supposed to follow. This is the path that you want to follow, not supposed to. And that the setbacks are just temporary. So there is always, a gentle balance there and some form of paradox. And I do hope this was helpful in at least a bit, and I'm definitely going to be putting out more stuff on this in the future.